Good morning. It's just a wonderful thing to look out and see the great number that we have in the building this morning to worship God. We're thankful for His providence and the gift of health that He's given so many of us to be able to be here. We continue, of course, to pray for those that are struggling with health issues, but we are thankful to our God for wonderful opportunities like this and for all that He has done for us in enabling us to have a relationship with Him and a hope of eternity. We are, everyone who's alive in this building this morning, all of us, aging. Doesn't matter what age you are aging as you sit there. Of course, some of us have been at it much longer than others. And I think as Christians, we need to know how to handle that. It's important. God has given us guidance. He's given us help. And as has been said by others, aging is not for sissies. There are things that you have to face and things you have to deal with that you didn't have to deal with earlier in life. And to be a Christian as you age, especially as you get in the later years, is challenging. And so the lesson really this morning is for everybody, but I think it will apply particularly to some of us who have a few gray hair. Some things just cannot be fully understood or appreciated until they're experienced. Growing old is such a thing. We who are younger, and sometimes even a good bit of the older folks, I put that wrong, you who are younger and some of us who are older, like to make fun of some of the things that happen in the aging process. You know, it's been said, you know you're getting older when your dreams are reruns. You know you're getting older when your knees buckle, but your belt won't. And you know you're getting older if you try to straighten out the wrinkles in your socks and you find out you're not wearing any socks. All of those things and many other, you know, jokes about the problem of growing older, we all get chuckles at those things. I have to tell you my dad's favorite joke. This is going somewhere. I'm not just telling jokes this morning, but I have to tell you my dad's favorite joke, and then you'll see why it's maybe not so funny. My dad had a different sense of humor, but when he got to being funny, he'd get this hysterical laughter after he told a joke, and you just had to laugh with him, whether the joke was funny or not. So here's his favorite joke. Three old ladies were sitting around discussing the problems of getting old. And one of them says, well, you know, my problem is I go into a room and I forget why I went in there. I can't remember why I went in there. And another one says, well, I don't have that problem, but I forget names. Sometimes I forget names even of my own children. I can't even remember what to call my children. And the third lady says, well, I don't have any of those problems, knock on wood. Who's there? So that was my dad's favorite joke. He told it a lot better than I just told it, and he'd laugh there at the end, and you'd have to laugh with him. The sad part of that joke is that my dad died with complications of Alzheimer's. Could not remember where he was or even who he was. My mother died also with complications of Alzheimer's. So we tell jokes about that kind of thing to keep from crying. Sometimes you have to laugh to keep from crying. And it's not that that's wrong. I don't think that's wrong. My dad, if he were still alive today, would still be telling that joke, okay? So, but there's a seriousness to it and a sadness to it that I think by the jokes we're trying to avoid somewhat. There's dread for most all of us in the process of aging, and it becomes more pronounced the older you get. Some may deny it or not realize it. But I think this morning what I want to say first off is that for the servant of God, aging is a blessing and an opportunity. Long life and salvation are both to be viewed as blessings. In the 91st Psalm in verse 16, God promised to the righteous one, with long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. What a blessing. In Proverbs 16 and verse 31, the silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. I learned just in the last couple of weeks from my wife that I've gone from the salt and pepper hair age to the all gray hair. She informed me that my hair is no longer salt and pepper. I'm just gray-headed old man now. But if I'm trying to do right, if it's in the way of righteousness, that's a crown of glory. I don't take that as an insult at all. It's a blessing. Aging, as we're saying, brings challenges, it brings changes. The strength of wisdom that is often gained by aging is traded out for physical weakness and infirmity often. But still, as we age, our lives can be blessed and can be a blessing if we are with God and God is with us. So the 71st Psalm says this in verses 8 and 9. Let my mouth be filled with your praise and with your glory all the day. Do not cast me off in the time of my old age. Do not forsake me when my strength fails. So there's the beautiful hope, there's the beautiful encouragement that we can plead with God and God will be with us even as our physical strength fails. We may still have opportunities to praise Him and to glorify Him even to the very last of our lives. So I want to suggest to us three things this morning as we think about aging as servants of God. The first of them is we need to challenge ourselves, as the Scriptures do, to continue to the very last to grow and bear fruit. In Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 7 and 8, Jeremiah says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord. For he shall be like a tree planted by the waters, which spreads out its roots by the river and will not fear when heat comes, but its leaf shall be green and will not be anxious in the year of drought, nor cease from yielding fruit." He just is planted. He's got sustenance. He's got nourishment. He's got water. He's got everything he needs. And he just continues to glorify God. He's not afraid of the future because his roots are planted in God himself. So plant yourself in the house of God by trusting him. The other passage that's so similar to this is Psalm 92 and verse 13. Psalm 92 and verse 13. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of God. I want you to think about the house of God, of course, in ancient times would have been the temple. Today, the temple is the body of Christ, the church. We plant ourselves in this relationship with God and His people. That's what that's talking about. We have planted ourselves in this eternal relationship with God and with His people. We plant ourselves in His house and we're flourishing in the courts of God. The next verse says, those who are planted in the house of the Lord, they shall flourish in the courts of God. They shall bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in Him. So even as we age, we can declare God's praises. We can give Him honor and glory in one way or another to the very last. The picture that you see on your screen is one that Micah Klim shared in a talk at school last week, and I asked him if I could borrow his illustration. The picture that you see on your screen is a picture of the tallest tree in the world. It is a coastal redwood in the Sequoia family. It's growing out in California. It is 20 meters higher than London's Big Ben. It is higher than the Statue of Liberty. It's got a name. They call it Hyperion, which is Greek for really high. Scientists estimate it's somewhere between 600 and 800 years old. Now, all of that is amazing. But the little tidbit that Micah shared, which is why I had to steal the illustration, was this. It's still growing. It's still growing. Being old, being big, is no excuse to quit growing. Longfellow wrote, "Shall we sit idly down and say, the night has come, it is no longer day, the night has not yet come. We are not quite cut off from labor by falling light. Something remains for us to do, even the oldest tree some fruit may bear." Even the oldest tree some fruit may bear. I believe that to be true. I've told the story many times of my 95-year-old grandmother teaching people in the nursing home the way of salvation, leading people to Christ. There is still fruit to be born. A lot of examples in this world of people who are in their twilight years who accomplished great things. Benjamin Franklin did the greatest service to his country after his 60th birthday. When he was 78, he invented bifocals. Winston Churchill, widely regarded as the single individual most responsible for the salvation of Europe from Hitler's aggression, would have been an utter failure had he died at 65. He had accomplished virtually nothing before then. Thomas Edison was still inventing important things when he died at 85. Michelangelo was still producing masterpieces when he died at 89. My favorite example is one from the Bible. Somebody named Caleb, one of the two good spies. And when they got into the land 40 years after being a good spy, he was 85 years old. And in Joshua chapter 14, verses 10 through 12, he wants a land. He wants his piece of the land. And he comes to Hebron and he says, "Give me this mountain, the mountain where the giants of Anak live. Get me that one, and I'll take it, and I'll live in it." And in fact, he did. Not afraid of challenges at that part in his life. It's an amazing story, one of encouragement and one of hope for us. What we can do as we grow older, no matter almost how old we are, we can give thanks to God, we can speak of Jesus, we can glorify Him by the way we live, and I'll talk about that some more in a little while. I love the story in Luke chapter 2, where Jesus, as a youngster, is brought into the temple. And there's a woman there by the name of Anna. It says that she was a widow of about 84 years. And scholars debate whether that means she'd been a widow for 84 years or she was 84 years old and a widow. But either way, at least 84 years old. She did not depart from the temple. The temple was her nursing home. Okay, she planted herself in the house of God. She did not depart from the temple. But it says that she served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And coming in the instant that she saw the child, Jesus, she gave thanks to the Lord and spoke of Him to all those who looked for the redemption in Israel. Talking about Jesus, the coming Messiah, to everybody who would listen, at least 84 years old. We can still bear fruit as we grow old. We can still grow ourselves and find new things to do, fresher ways even of glorifying our God. Secondly, as we grow older, we need to learn to serve the coming generation. There's a poem written by Will Anderson Drumgoole about a bridge builder. You may have heard the poem, especially if you're connected with Athens Bible School. There's an award that is offered there called the Bridge Builder Award. And I'm not going to cite the poem to you, but basically an old man is coming to the end of his life, so to speak, but he's traveling. He's coming to Twilight, and there's this great chasm, and he could have got around it, I suppose, some other way, but he builds a nice bridge over the chasm and crosses over that way. And someone, fellow pilgrim, says to him, you wasted a lot of time there. You're only going to cross this way once. You're toward the end of your life. Why would you build this bridge over the chasm? And the reason he gives is, well, there's a youth that's following, and he may come here and find this very, very difficult. I built the bridge for him. We need, as we get older and older, need to be bridge builders for the coming generation so that they can make their way to eternity. I hope that we will, all of us who are getting older, take up that challenge and take it up very seriously. We can build bridges by being examples, by being teachers, by being encouragers. You don't have to look even between the lines at Paul's instructions to Titus in Titus chapter 2 to see that. He tells Titus as a preacher in verse 1, he says, "As for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in the faith, in love and in patience, that older women likewise be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children." Build the bridges. Build the spiritual bridges for the future generation. Yes, if you've lived a long time in service to God, you should have learned a lot by your experiences and from His Word. You should have gained wisdom, as we'll talk about in a second. There's a lot that you can share and should strive to share with the generation that is following behind. Serve that coming generation. Provide opportunities for that coming generation. The Lord wants us to do what we can at every stage of life. The trouble is, as we get older, is that we can't do as much as we used to. Physically, mentally, we just slow down. But we can provide opportunities for the younger ones who can do those things. There's a great story tucked in the Old Testament in 2 Samuel chapter 19. I'd like you to go there with me. Not one that we hear preached a lot about or hear much about. David has just had to go through the humiliation of having his son Absalom rebel against him and try to stage a coup and take over the kingdom. And he's now coming back to Jerusalem. And the text talks in 2 Samuel chapter 19 and verse 31 that there's a guy by the name of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and he comes down from Rogelim, and he went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. And Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old. But he'd provided for the king with supplies when he stayed in Mahanaim, and he was a very rich man. So the king says to Barzillai, "Come across with me, and I will provide for you while you're with me in Jerusalem." In other words, just come back with me to Jerusalem, and I'll set you up there. You've done so much for me. I want to help you out. And here's the response. "I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between good and bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king, and why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant turn back again, and then may I die in my own city, near the grave of my fathers and mother. But here is your servant Chimham." I want you to remember Chimham. That's one of the blanks on your worksheet if you're following that today. Know who Chimham is. Because he's the younger man, apparently the son of Barzillai. And what Barzillai is saying, he can do a lot. Chimham, let him cross over with you and do for him what seems good to you. He's got his life to live. He's got a lot to accomplish. And I want to make provision for him to do great things in his life. Chim Ham goes with him. And we don't read any more about Chim Ham until over 300 years later, when, after the Babylonians have come into Judah, and much is destroyed, and some of the Judeans are trying to escape, in Jeremiah 41 and verse 17, they come to the habitation of Chim Ham, which is near Bethlehem. You will remember Bethlehem is the city of David, no doubt where David would have taken Chim Ham. And what we learn from this, apparently, is that Chim Ham indeed did go with David and was set up well there, and the name of his house is remembered and probably still living, not he, but his house, 300 years later. Because Barzillai wanted to make sure that somebody coming behind him had a great opportunity. There are lots of examples like that actually in Scripture. There's lots of examples like that in life. What are we doing for the generation that's behind us to set them up well, not just financially, but spiritually, with help so that they can succeed in their lives getting to heaven? What are we doing for them? Let's make use of the advantages of age. And if you're getting older, you know that there are some. And it's more than just, you know, getting a discount at the fast food restaurant. Those are great, by the way. But there are other advantages of getting older as well. One of them is that if you've lived in the way of righteousness, you should have a significant amount of wisdom to pass on. I remember in Job chapter 12 and verse 12, Job says that wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days comes understanding. I believe that's the truth. So you have much to share. You have guidance to share. And you can carefully do that as you have opportunity with younger people who are looking for a way to go, who are trying to understand what life is all about. But also, you have a status that you may not realize when you're older, especially among God's people. In the world today, maybe older folks are not much respected, but among God's people, they are. We had a prayer this morning that mentioned just those that are older. And you have a lot that you can share with younger folks, but also you have a lot of influence. Do you realize that? Younger folks will do things as favors to older people to honor them. So here's the deal. Here's a little secret. Young people, don't listen to this. Old people, older people, ask the young people to do favors for you or to do things for others, to use their youth and vitality and strength to help others, or to work in the church in some way. A lot of things need doing in a physical way around this building. I'm almost tickled sometimes when I read the book of Philemon. It's a masterpiece of somebody getting somebody to do something and making it sound like this is, it's like Tom Sawyer, you know, getting all his buddies to paint the fence, right? It's like the Apostle Paul is writing to Philemon about Philemon's runaway slave, who your natural inclination, if you had a runaway slave, who maybe even had, you know, taken something from you on his way out, that seems to be implied in the book of Philemon, you wouldn't necessarily want to receive that fellow back kindly, that runaway slave. So Paul is writing to Philemon and saying, take him back and do good to him and treat him like a brother. And listen to the appeal in Philemon verse 9. He says, Paul says to him, for love's sake, I appeal to you being such a one as Paul the aged. Now, why does he throw that in there? You get it, right? I'm just an old man, and I'm the aged, and now I'm in prison for Jesus Christ. I mean, he's laying it on thick, isn't he? He's using his status as an older person, as someone who's gone through a lot for the gospel of Christ, to ask somebody to do the right thing and to help out. Those of you who are older all have that power. You have that ability. There's someone, maybe a lot of someones, who respect you and who will do good just if you ask them to do it. Just because you ask them to do it. We hear a lot about playing the race card nowadays. Play the age card. Paul says, I appeal to you for my son Onesimus, who I have begotten while in my chains. Serve the coming generation. And there's a lot to do there. I'm just really touching the hem of the garment. There's a lot to do there. Thirdly, prepare for the next life. Unless the Lord comes back, death and decay are inevitable. But so is the resurrection. In Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 7, the wise man wrote, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 20, he said, all go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to dust. That's how God said it would be when he cursed the man back in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 19. He said, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. A lot of people are concerned about, maybe overly so, about what to do with their mortal remains, or what should be done with their mortal remains. And I believe from a scriptural standpoint, it really doesn't make hardly any difference. If you're buried, if you're cremated, if you're buried at sea, whatever, and whatever happens to you. What the Bible says is, no matter who you are, when you die, you're going back to the dust. Most bodies of ancient times are not discoverable. They're not peacefully in a skeleton form or in a tomb with the mummies of Pharaoh. They've gone back to the dust. So, cremation, donation of your remains to medical science, whatever, those are all personal choices. The resurrection, the Bible says, will be bodily, but it will not be physical. In 1 Corinthians 15, which is the text in Scripture that explains, I think, the most about this, Paul will write in 1 Corinthians 15, starting in verse 35, someone will say, how are the dead raised up? And with what body do they come? He says, foolish one, what you sow is not made alive unless it dies. So this body dies. What you sow, you do not sow that body that shall be. This body is not the one that shall be. It's going to be raised a physical body, but it's not going to be this one. Because what you sow is a physical body. It's mere grain. It's like, you put the grain in the ground, the seed in the ground, and what comes up isn't seed. It's something else. It's a plant. It's alive. It comes from what's put in the ground, but it's completely different. And that's what Paul is saying. And as you go on in the text, I want to pick up in verse 44 as he talks about the difference in the bodies and all of that. But he says in verse 44, it's sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. There is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. For so it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being. The last man, Adam, became a life-giving spirit. However, the spirit is not first, but the natural, and afterward, the spiritual. The first man was of the earth, made of dust. The second man is the Lord from heaven. And as was the man of dust, so also are those who are made of dust. And as is the heavenly man, so also are those who are heavenly. And as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly man. The man of dust, whatever happens to him, that's just part of the temporary. The heavenly man is eternal. And that's the one that matters. Death and decay are inevitable. That doesn't concern us that much. The resurrection, that's where our hope is. That's where our thoughts are. Secondly, as you prepare for the next life, deal with disappointments, regrets, the sins of your youth perhaps, other problems that you've had in life, and if you've lived very long, you've had lots of problems. Whatever they are, deal with them as God would have you. Don't let Satan ruin your life by focusing your mind on the errors and mistakes that you have made if God has already forgiven you. Ask God to forget those things and you forget them too. The psalmist prayed in Psalm 25 and verse 7, "Do not remember the sins of my youth, nor my transgressions. According to your mercy, remember me. For your goodness' sake, O Lord, remember me." We have to look beyond the temporary, beyond the pain, the struggles, the decay, the problems, to the eternal. And so we're admonished in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16, do not lose heart. As you get old, and Paul was getting old as he wrote this, as you get older, do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet our inward man is being renewed day by day. He's old, but he's still growing. We're old, but we're still growing. Our light affliction, and we have pains, we have problems, we have difficulties. And again, they get worse as we get older usually. But he calls it a light affliction, which is for the moment, is working for us a far more exceeding eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Look at the eternal. If you look at the temporary, if you focus your, especially in your later years, if you focus your life on the temporary pain that you're going through, problems in your family, mistakes that you've made in times past that God has already forgiven, if you focus your life on all of that, you will be miserable. Focus on the eternal. Suffer pain with grace to the glory of God. In 2 Corinthians, again, chapter 12 and verse 7, Paul talks about how, lest he should be exalted above measure, there was this thorn in the flesh that was given to him, a messenger of Satan. Apparently something quite painful. He calls it a thorn. And he pleaded with the Lord three times to take it away, but the Lord didn't take it away. He was just going to be in pain from now on. I know some of you in this room are suffering from chronic pain that is not going away and may never go away. I want you to understand that's exactly where Paul was. He had a thorn in the flesh that was not going away and it might never go away. What's he to do? What will he do? The Lord said to him in verse 9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities." That's my weaknesses, my sicknesses, my pain. I'll boast in that, that the power of Christ may rest on me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecution, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So he's living to the glory of God, whatever it is that he has to go through, including this physical pain. As we age, our health, our freedom, our strength, our personal choices, ability to make personal choices, may be all taken away from us. I mean, really, you wind up in a nursing home, and there are several of us here who are, that's where we're going to wind up, probably, if life continues. You don't decide when you eat. You don't decide when it's time to get up, when it's time to go to bed, when it's time to take a bath. All of that's taken away. But you can still glorify God. That's what Paul came to understand. The words that Jesus shared with Peter there at the end of John 21, he tells him, you know, follow me. After he's had this discussion with him about, do you love me? Yes, I love you. Do you love me? Yes, I love you. And he says, you follow me. And then he says to him, you know what, Peter? When you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wanted to. So young people, you can do what you want to. You're strong enough. You're free enough. You know, you get to go where you want to go, do what you want to do. I'm not talking about young people that are living at home. You have to do what your parents say. But I'm talking about young people who are away from home. They're free. But Jesus tells Peter, when you're old, you're going to stretch out your hands and another's going to gird you and carry you where you do not wish to go. And this he spoke to him, signifying by what death he would glorify God. That could not have been pleasant for Peter in his old age to be bound, taken someplace, probably persecuted, and certainly put to death, is what Jesus is telling him. But what Jesus tells him is, this is how you're going to glorify God. The lives that have impacted me the most are lives of people who lived a long time serving the Lord, and perhaps whose last few years were in pain, loss of freedom, loss of mobility, but they died in faith. I was reminded just yesterday by a Facebook friend of a lady whose funeral I preached. It would have been 12 years ago today. Who was that kind of person? Who, she being dead yet speaks. Whose influence upon me and dozens and maybe hundreds of other people. Not just because of the way that she lived, but because of the way she died. In faith. Finish your race. Finish your race. We all of us need to realize that how you finish a race is much more important than how you started it. You think of Saul of Tarsus. Saul of Tarsus, really, he had a lot of physical advantages in the beginning of his life, societal advantages, religious advantages, but He was really doing some terrible things, as we're introduced to him in the book of Acts. I'm thankful he ended a lot better than he started. Compare him to the person who was no doubt his namesake. You know, Saul of Tarsus was of the tribe of Benjamin, and with the name Saul, I'm nearly certain that he was named after King Saul of the tribe of Benjamin. And King Saul of the Old Testament started out great, right? humble, strong, mighty warrior, leader of God's people. And he ended up with his pride and his paranoia taking him to a humiliating death. Inglorious and shameful for a king of God's people. You contrast the end of those two men, and what's the difference? One of them didn't trust God to the end, and one of them did. Saul of Tarsus started as a persecutor of the church, but near the end, as he sat in a Roman jail, knowing that martyrdom was just around the corner, very aware that the end of his life was quickly approaching, he could say with confidence, "I am being poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also who have loved his appearing." And that will be and include a lot of people who lived to be very old. All them also who have loved his appearing. Life may not have turned out like you wanted it to, like you expected that it would, like you hoped for from an earthly perspective. Just let the Lord be your fulfillment. Let heaven be worth it all. Finish your race. If you live a long time as a servant of God, I will guarantee you this, you will lose a lot. You will lose a lot because you've been given a lot. You've probably, if you live a long time, been given a lot of years of good health. You may not have them at the end, but you've been given a lot of years of good health if you live a good long life. You've been given probably good parents, maybe a good spouse, children, friends, physical blessings, homes, cars, food to eat. In the end, you're going to lose so much before you leave this life because you've been given so much. Do you understand that? But oh, what you stand to gain. The crown of righteousness. Let's live for that, whatever age we are. And if this morning you're not living for that, give your life to Jesus. Give all of your life from this moment forward to the very end, whenever it comes. Grow, get tall, get strong, bear fruit for the Lord. If you're ready to do that, make that commitment today, let us help you. We'd ask you to come while we stand, while we sing.